It amazes me that for all of our advances as a society, gender biases are still a problem in the 21st century. If anyone doubts that girls face discouragement because of their gender, consider the experience of Nick Hahn. Nick is a software designer at IBM and what I call a tech dad. He's had a lifelong fascination with all things digital and is deeply committed to sparking his daughter's interest in computing. He recently shared a story with me that involves Minecraft, the hugely popular video game that has introduced millions of kids to the basics of computer coding through its digital-style game commands. When my 7-year-old daughter was just getting into Minecraft, she was excited to share her new interest with another 7-year-old girl whose family was visiting us. Her friend's mom overheard our conversation as I brought my laptop out and turned the game on. She seemed surprised that I'd been showing my daughter Minecraft. Right there, in front of us all, she said to her daughter, "Oh, honey, that game is for boys. You don't need to bother with that." Then she looked at me and laughed, like I didn't get this either, and said, "Why do you show this to your daughter? It's not for her." The mom in Nick's story didn't intend to limit or hurt her daughter. She probably knew almost nothing about Minecraft and had thought very little about the social or intellectual content of video games. That's the nature of insidious bias. Its invisible influence permeates our culture so deeply that it can go unrecognized until someone blurts out such a jarring statement. And yes, as the story illustrates, women too can be infected with insidious forms of bias that limit and hurt the opportunities for girls. It probably doesn't come as news to you that girls and women face gender bias that can limit their opportunities and discourage their participation in many activities. But not everyone understands the subtle ways that gender bias holds women back, and the ways that three interrelated forms of bias reinforce one another. I'm referring to the belief that science is for boys, not girls, that entrepreneurship comes naturally to men, not to women, and that leaders in general are male rather than female. All three of these stereotypes are false, despite the fact that they are deeply ingrained in our society. So deeply, in fact, that many of us are influenced by them without even realizing it. And all three are closely intertwined, each bias strengthening and supporting the others, and thereby creating a wall against female achievement that is surprisingly difficult to overcome. That pattern of interlocking gender barriers is the big problem I've devoted my life to solving. It's a pattern that stands in the way of empowering girls and women in our society, which means it not only deprives women of the opportunities to succeed and strive for what they deserve and want, but it also deprives our society as a whole of the talent, creativity, and energy that half our population can contribute. I learned how these interlocking biases work in the most painful way possible, by experiencing them firsthand. As I explained in the introduction, I was a very lucky young girl. I grew up with parents who nurtured my curiosity and my interests in science and math. They inspired my confidence and self-esteem by encouraging me to dream big and follow my passion. They encouraged me to fly by refusing to clip my wings. They made it feel safe to explore my ideas and try new things. As a result, I never saw a difference between boys and girls, and I was not afraid to ask silly questions or go down the unpaved roads. I had the opportunity to reach my fullest potential and develop the talents that have helped me enjoy a successful career as an engineer, a professor, and an entrepreneur. Unfortunately, not everyone in the world is as accustomed to seeing girls in STEM, entrepreneurship, and leadership. And like many women, I've experienced my own share of gender bias, whether unconscious, explicit, or institutionalized throughout my journey. I'll never forget my years in grad school, working late hours doing research in the lab and handling toxic bone-eating chemicals in order to create a new way to treat cancer patients. I was 27 and weighing the tough choice between starting a family and waiting until I finished my PhD, as many women in academia do. After much deliberation, I decided not to wait, and I got pregnant at age 28. I worked in the lab until the day my water broke, and returned just 5 weeks after my son was born. Shortly after I resumed working, I was scheduled to make a presentation at a scientific conference in Europe. I'd been warned that if I missed this opportunity, I might forfeit ownership of my research project. So here I was on a plane to Vienna with my five-week-old son, nervously trying to breastfeed him under the disapproving stare of the male business traveler sitting next to me. Thankfully, the stewardess was a cordial British woman who responded to the businessman's complaints by explaining that breastfeeding is very natural and allowed him to move to an empty seat in the back of the plane. I spent the conference in Vienna seeking quiet corners in which to breastfeed my son between sessions spent preparing and presenting my talk.